Welcome back. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Rachel.
And every week we watch a formative movie from my childhood, force Rachel to watch it.
Yeah.
And then we discuss it in terms of race and masculinity and feminism and equality and all that good stuff.
Jordan went to the gun show outside of town, bought a handgun so that he can really force me to watch movies. That's a lie. None of that happened.
Yeah, we don't own guns. Please don't rob us.
We totally own guns and lots of guns. Definitely don't rob us.
But we do own several landmines that are hidden in, around the house.
Yes, several landmines.
Even I don't know where all of them are.
I met a man named Claymore at the gym this week.
that's interesting.
And I made a joke about Claymore mines and he looked at me blankly.
That's strange. You'd think he would have heard that before.
Yeah, and I think he's military too.
Yeah.
I feel like he would have heard that. Anyway, Claymore, if you're listening, that joke was pretty good. I'm just saying.
Yeah, every week, in addition to that, we also make a sugar-free, or Rachel makes a sugar-free dessert for us to try out. And altogether, that's a recipe for disaster. So, Rachel, what are you making for us today?
So, I have made chocolate chip cookie dough cheesecake.
Whoa.
Bars.
Whoa. Chocolate chip cookie dough cheesecake bars.
Yes.
That sounds like something that I would, like, dream up in, like, a haze.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why are big dog Bones is just licking Rachel right now? Like, maybe it's the cookie dough cheesecake. He looks like he's on crack.
No, he's just got his head in my lap and his pupils are like covering his entire eye.
Yeah.
He's just staring.
That's the way that I get when you say words like cookie dough cheesecake bars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a man and he understands that.
No, he has human intelligence. Basically.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so what made you want to make these?
I was sitting there and I was like, what's the most decadent thing ever? What's the most decadent thing I can make? Because I have had a rough week. It's been a rough week.
It's been a long one.
I thought I lost my wedding ring yesterday, guys, in the gym. I thought somebody had taken it.
Yeah.
I was super sad.
Maybe Claymore.
Maybe Claymore? Doubtful. That guy's really nice.
Yeah.
But who knows? and so yesterday I was freaking out all day yesterday. Like, I'm a bad wife. I can't hold on to anything. Everybody knows it.
Yeah.
And this little glimpse into my personal life.
Oh, yeah. You're always so worried that everybody hates you. Nobody hates you. Literally no one.
Oh, I'm sure there are people.
Well, there's got maybe one or two, but they're, you know, outliers.
Anyway, I was just like, I need something that will make me feel like I'm indulging deeply, truly, and thoroughly. And so I thought about, like, wouldn't it be awesome if I could make a cheesecake with a cookie base?
Yeah.
And so I did.
Cookies are amazing. Cheesecake is amazing. Why wouldn't you combine them? That sounds entirely decadent. Exactly like you described.
And it's all sugar-free. And I even use sugar-free chocolate chips. And it turned out, guys, it turned out so good.
It looks good. Yeah.
It looks really good. I was really surprised. Because I didn't think, you know, because with it being super low carb and you use like almond. I made my own recipe, first of all, for the cookies because I got tired of the ones on the internet being kind of gross.
Yeah.
And so I made my own recipe. Sorry, my eyes are watering because I made pickled onions and I'm not crying.
For the cookie cheesecake?
No, earlier. And now it's like in the air.
Yeah.
So my eyes, maybe that's what Bones was trying to lick me for. He's like, here, your eyes are watering. Something's wrong.
You need to bend down so he can lick your eyeballs.
That'll help. Dr. Jordan prescribes a dog lick to the eyeball.
Yeah, if you ever get onion juice in your eyes, yeah, just have a dog lick it right out of there. You got to hold your eye open, though. It's very strange. No, don't do that, okay? Please, don't do that. You'll hurt yourself.
I feel like we do that all the time. We're like, here's this funny thing. Do it. No, actually, don't.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Well, I got to make sure. There's a lot of fucking morons out there. So, whoa! You know, I don't think that anybody that's listening to this currently is one of them. But you never know. So I got to be careful. If you're one of those people who heard me say, have a dog lick your eyeball, and you thought, what a good idea. You're the fucking morons that I'm talking about right there.
Maybe there's some people who have, like, crazy research about dog saliva and enzymes in it and how it affects your eyeball.
Maybe. Animal saliva scientists, give us a, shoot us a line at recipeforDisasterShow@gmail.com. We want to hear from you.
Boy, you know it.
Is it safe to have a dog lick your eyeball? And if not, what animal is safe?
to have lick your eyeball.
Yeah.
Probably it's safe.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, unless they have like Giardia or something. And I don't even know if Giardia can transfer that way.
Huh.
Who knows? Anyway.
Strange words.
Yeah,
Rachel, how does it go putting this thing together? How do you make a cookie cheesecake bar
so
batch?
What I did, again, I made my own recipe. I used a blend of almond and coconut flours.
For the cookie part.
For the cookie part. Which I think that is the weakness with a lot of like low-carb, gluten-free cookie recipes is that the ratios of flours are strange in a lot of them. And
why do you think that is?
It's almond flour is hard to work with.
Is it really?
It really is. It's hard. And coconut flour is too, because it's really hydrophilic, which means it loves water.
Yeah.
And so you have to use a quarter of a cup of coconut flour to every cup you would use in a wheat flour recipe because of how absorbent it is. And that changes the bulk of the recipe.
Okay.
So what I did was I used mostly, I used 2/3 almond flour and just like 1/3 of the recipe is coconut flour. And I added a little bit of tapioca starch in there to give it some better texture. Like give it a little bit more spring in the cookie.
Yeah.
And a lot of butter, y'all. Mucho butter.
I love having lots of butter. That is always a positive.
And then you just take it and press it down in the bottom of like a Pyrex baking pan.
Okay.
And I line mine with parchment paper because I'm lazy and I hate cleaning things up. And
fair enough.
And not only that, but it really does like improve the aesthetics of the dessert because it's not stuck to the bottom or anything.
Gotcha.
And then I made a cheesecake topping with eggs. All erythritol is a sweetener. A little bit of eggs, some cream cheese. Gosh, I think that may have been it. It's just like eggs and cream cheese and erythritol and a little vanilla extract. I don't even think I added cream to it.
Yeah.
Whip
it all up.
Yep. Pour it over the cookie base, unbaked. And then, like, reserve some of your cookie dough. And then sprinkle the reserved cookie dough on top.
Ooh.
And so it's not really like a quote-unquote cookie dough cheesecake. It's more like a cookie cheesecake.
Sure, yeah.
Chocolate chip
cookie dough in it.
Chocolate chip cookie cheesecake, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, still amazing.
Stick that bad boy in the oven and like bake it until it's just set, and then let it sit overnight.
Oh,
and
hell
it's
yeah.
Really, I think it's really good.
I mean, I agree. It's 100% completely amazing looking, and I can't wait to dig into it.
Yeah.
So let's take a break. And we'll talk about the movie. Come back and try these cookie cheesecake bars.
All right.
Mm. I've got a good one for you today. I've been holding off on this one because it's another Robert Zemeckis.
No.
Yeah.
No.
There's a lot of Zemeckis that is from our childhoods and is also very problematic.
Yeah.
So today we're watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Which is a live-action cartoon mashup movie. Have you seen this movie before?
We watched this like not 3 months ago.
No, that's not. No, that's not true at all. Because we haven't watched it in years.
Are you kidding me? If you find it on there, because it's gonna be on there. If you find it on there, and it shows like last played 3 months ago, then I get to not do this episode.
Gotcha. But you're gonna lose because it's been like years and years since we've watched this movie, and I think you may be confusing it with something else.
I'm not. I remember it because I talked about Cool World.
You've talked about Cool World for other reasons recently, and on the podcast too.
We've watched it recently.
No, that's not true.
Yes, and it is, because I remember looking, seeing the shoes go into the goo and being like, that's fucked up.
So that's something you remember is when he dips a cartoon shoe into, what is it? It's not formaldehyde.
It's like magic acid that dissolves. Oh, it's turpentine.
It's paint thinner. Yeah, exactly. So they murder some cartoons. Yeah, so this movie, for those that don't know, is about a detective who's called to investigate a murder that takes place in a world where there are sentient cartoons that live in the real world with us.
Uh-huh.
And they're kind of like a persecuted class. But there's a problematic character that the reason I picked this is specifically just for Jessica Rabbit.
Yeah.
I can't wait to talk about it. We can talk a little bit about it right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same shit, different day.
Yeah.
It's all it is. It's just men drawing or creating or objectifying a woman in a way that... I'm trying to say things that aren't like get your dick hard, that are like more intellectual, but base of it.
I don't think we need to get any more intellectual than that. In fact, I think it might be important to just keep it in like vulgar terms, because that's what it is. It's incredibly really vulgar and incredibly disrespectful. Like, but the only reason is for it to get your dick hard.
Yeah, but I mean, a thing that I want to make sure that people understand is like, I'm not demonizing female sexuality. That's fucking great. Girls, get out there and bang if that's what you want. Don't bang if that's what you want. I'm all about that. Like, female sexuality is a powerful and important thing. Because I don't want them to hear vulgar and think that, like, I'm being like, sex is wrong.
Oh, sure.
Because it's not like that. Like, sex is great. Sex is a supernatural thing that we do. But what I have a problem with is female sexuality as created by and then leered at by men.
Okay.
That's what I have a problem with.
Yeah. And I can understand that. I think to expound on that is, like, my issue is that, like you said, I mean, there are women who define themselves by their sexuality, and that's perfectly fine.
You heard that, y'all? Jordan and Rachel said it's fine.
It's fine. That's it. Okay. Go ahead. I white man number... 5,276,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,
thanks.
But the problem is that, like, in media, that's all that women are.
Right.
Oftentimes. There are very few instances of women in movies that, or in TV shows or whatever,
right,
where they have any kind of independent thought whatsoever,
right,
or any character traits that aren't, I really want to have sex with the male main character,
or
I'm there to titillate the audience.
Or I'm there to stroke male egos.
Yeah, exactly.
Ding-dongs and egos, they're linked.
Not to mention that, like, Jessica Rabbit is a intentionally overly sexualized character that
sure.
is, I mean, and I get it in the sense of the fact that, like, she is a cartoon, so there's, like, a meta thing there where it's kind of like, okay, she, in the world of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, she was obviously drawn to, like, titillate somebody, and so that character probably would exist in a world where like, cartoons are sentient, but at the same time, like, are we really doing this again? Really?
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
And not only that, is she the only female character?
I think so. We'll see again, but I'm pretty sure that she is the only female character. And one, she's not even human. So, like, there's that to consider. There's a ton of men in this movie.
Right.
Well, we'll have to see for sure, because it's been a while since we've watched this.
It hasn't.
And so I don't remember if there are any other women in this movie. But I, off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure there aren't.
Aren't.
Aren't. I'm making sure to enunciate contractions.
I've never heard aren't pronounced aren't.
You haven't?
Well, except with you.
For emphasis?
They aren't.
Yeah. Well, you know, like in Zoolander when he's like, I got news for you, Walter Cronkite. Or you think you're too cool for school? Well, I got news for you, Walter Cronkite. You aren't.
Do not model your linguistic patterns off of Derek Zoolander.
There's worse things to model your... You thought I didn't know what a yagoogly was?
A yagoogly.
That's a much better movie that we're not watching today.
Love Zoolander.
Yeah. Ben Stiller's a funny guy.
What is this?
Or he was, anyway.
Yeah.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit, though? I remember, so when I was a kid, I liked this movie a lot.
Did you?
And even then, I recognized that Jessica Rabbit was like, it kind of made me ashamed to watch the movie.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, this movie for little boys and that are like me, I really enjoy, like, the noir aesthetic.
You're right.
This has got a lot of those elements in it, and we'll probably talk more about that later. But, you know, I mean, the main character's name is Eddie Valentine. Like, it's very, like, much pulled from, like, a pulp novel. Like, you know, somebody gets murdered in L.A., and it's all related to, like, a movie studio type of thing where there's money involved and a conspiracy and secrets and blah, 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 blah. And so that's...
My patience waned within 10 seconds of that.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't blame you. Like, that noir formula is kind of... always the same and kind of always has been.
Well, and that's one of the reasons I really like Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, why is that?
Because they take that trope and they really kind of turn it on its head, the noir trope.
Which part of it?
Whenever you're thinking about Eddie, the biker who was played by Meatloaf.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's like a lot of that, like, and like the dark noir, like horror noir.
Yeah.
And, you know... It really subverts that, and it, like, puts the main character, who's Tim Curry, in a corset and really, like, upends femininity and masculinity. Sure. And it was one of the most prominent movies featuring, like, homosexual sex.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really gave people a place to be weird.
Yeah.
And there's... so much, and I feel like noir for me is like the opposite of that. I feel like what it does, because I hate noir. I hate it. Jordan knows I hate it.
Oh, I know you do.
Because I feel like all it does is it's the same thing, and it just reinforces the exact same masculine tropes, and it puts women in refrigerators, and I'm bored. I'm bored. I'm just so bored with it.
Yeah, I really think that there's maybe only like two different noir stories that actually exist, and all the others are just like reproductions of them,
right,
in varying levels of efficacy.
Sure.
So it's like, you know, Chinatown is basically the exact same story as Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Now, can I say that one's actually made by a rapist this time?
Yes, that's true.
And no one will fight me on it?
No, I won't fight you on that. Roman Polanski is a convicted rapist and has been exiled from America for that. But he was still on the board of the Academy Awards for, like, the longest time until Me Too, and they finally kicked him out because of pressure from outside people. These are the people that make our movies. They're the ones that are like, oh, you know, he's a rapist, but let's keep letting him make movies.
But he's a genius.
Yeah. Nobody seems to care. Until, you know, their money's on the line, and then it's like, oh, okay, now we can disavow this guy. Anyway, Who Framed Roger Rabbit is basically Chinatown with a twist, and the twist is that there are sentient cartoons. That's it. It doesn't break anything, it doesn't really do anything particularly interesting that I remember, so we'll have to see. Yeah, I'm expecting to see a lot of the same old, same old. I'm expecting to have
some... Why are you doing this to us?
Well, because we're going to talk about it. We're going to analyze it under this lens, and we're going to see why exactly these problems exist and what can be done in the future to change it.
Oh, okay. I mean, I don't have a really... Generally speaking, whenever we're going to watch a movie, I have, like, an idea of the issue that I kind of want to talk about.
Sure.
But I really... With this one... I'm not sure. I mean, I think a lot of it for me is going to be about creativity in filmmaking.
Okay.
And like what it means to be an artist and what it means to give, like, give other people a chance to be artists.
Sure.
Maybe that's what I'll think about with this. But I swear to you, we've watched this at least in the past year. I know we have.
No.
Okay.
I vehemently deny that.
Well, I vehemently know that we have.
Maybe we'll see.
And what if, and if it is, I'm going to be like, booyah, and then we're going to have to watch Cool World.
Cool World's too scary. And I also, I never saw that as a kid. So that was not a, that was a part of my adult life more than anything. Cool World is not meant for children in any way.
Boy, I saw that when I was 5 years old.
That's fucked up.
Not on purpose. My dad was watching it and I was laying in the hallway, like when I was supposed to be taking a nap watching it.
I mean, it's funny because like that movie has some similarities to this one in that I can't remember the name of that female cartoon in Cool World, but she is very much like a Jessica Rabbit type of character that's like a va-va-voom.
Oh, yeah.
Overly voluptuous, ridiculously proportioned person.
Well, you know what? Maybe that's how I'll think about this movie is because about like female cartoon characters.
Yeah.
Because if you think about Aeon Flux, which is a show I love, and Tank Girl, the show and the comic.
Yeah.
Like, those are women who are ridiculously proportioned and exhibit sexuality, but it's very, very powerful, very, very agency-driven sexuality.
Sure. Yeah.
And so I feel like a lot of these women, Jessica Rabbit, and I may be wrong, Jessica Rabbit, the woman in Cool World, don't have agency with their sexuality. It's not about their sexuality and their sexual wants and needs.
Yeah.
What it's about is becoming objects to slap male sexuality onto.
Agreed. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things I'm excited to talk to you about more than anything else. Like, I think that that's going to be an interesting topic of conversation.
Sure.
After we have it fresh in our heads. Do you remember the first time that you saw this movie?
I was a kid. Gosh, I must have been like 8.
Yeah.
8 or 9.
Okay.
Yeah. My dad liked this movie.
Sure.
And so I watched it and it didn't, I wasn't scared of it. I wasn't, the funny thing is, like, I was not scared of a lot of things when I was a kid, like on TV.
Yeah.
I had a very powerful grandmother who I've talked about before who would watch scary things with me, and I would sit by her in the recliner.
Mm-hmm.
She had this brown recliner and she had a big wolf blanket and she would cover us up with this wolf blanket and I was like snuggle up next to her in the recliner. And like would pet the skin on her hands because it was so soft.
Yeah.
You know, old lady hands are so soft. I would pet her hands and we would watch movies together. And I think we watched this one together and she was like, cause she would take care of me. And she was like, she just had a way of taking the air out of things that were scary. She would look at me whenever something scary on screen would happen. She'd be like, isn't that silly? Ain't that silly? And I'd be like, oh, okay. This matriarch's not afraid.
Yeah.
Guess I shouldn't be either. So this movie didn't scare me or anything. I just remember being like having weird feelings about Jessica Rabbit and not really understanding those.
I do remember. Yeah, I can identify with that. I do remember. So I saw this movie at a friend's house.
Vicky, did you know?
Well, it wasn't. I don't remember whether or not it would be something that I would have been allowed to watch at that age.
Right.
I think it would have been fine. But it did scare me. Christopher Lloyd's character, who's like the... I guess he's like a judge for cartoons.
Yeah.
Like, he kind of terrified me quite a bit. You know, murdering, like, whimpering cartoons by dipping them into turpentine is pretty scary.
Yeah.
And also, like, the weasels that he has that kind of, like, are his goon squad or whatever that follow him around. Like,
oh, I liked them.
At the end, they laugh themselves to death or whatever. That actually really scared me, like, quite a bit.
That's so funny. You were so much...
I don't know why that was so terrifying.
I think you were a lot more... you were a sensitive, kind of a sensitive kid. I don't know. Maybe you weren't.
Maybe. I don't know.
Because I remember really liking the weasels and... really, like, liking their little fedoras and like their little pinstripe suits.
Yeah.
And being, because I always felt like villains had a lot more power. For me, I really liked villains because they were powerful.
And I typically liked villains too. I was a big fan of Jafar from Aladdin and like Ursula from Little Mermaid, that kind of stuff. Like, I thought they were cool.
I like Ursula.
This one scares me, and maybe it's because mob mentality is one of those things that we've talked about privately that like really scares me a lot.
Right.
And I just, these weasel guys like give me kind of that sense where it's like there's a unspoken or unshown mob somewhere that has all voted to allow these like horribly fascist weasels to go around and like murder cartoons for like very small perceived slights. Like, that kind of stuff really scares me. Like, for those of you who want to get a sense of like a movie like that that terrifies me, The Mist, that came out like in 2007, that's a movie that really scares me.
All the same, we should think about policing in America when you say those things.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, because that is exactly what happens. I mean, people get gunned down in the street with absolutely no repercussions for the person who does it.
Yep.
Like, not even, I mean, we get a slap on the wrist from, you know, people who get angry about it and protest and stuff like that in terms of, oh, that, like, upended my life. Like, okay, but you're still alive. Like, there's a person who's dead, and there's been, like, our justice system has given absolutely, or has said absolutely nothing on the subject.
I mean, let's think about the Parkland shootings for a minute.
Sure.
Like, the Parkland shootings, what was it, 17 children died?
Yeah.
Or 17 children and administrators and teachers, I think. And there were these children, a lot of the surviving children. I say children, I work with freshmen in college, and I still think they're my children. but they're adults. But I guess I would say these teenagers got up there and were like, we need some fucking gun control, okay? Because this shit, you can't fly anymore.
Yeah.
And politicians were just, like, hideous to them. We're just like, well, what if... Well, no, absolutely not, because these children deserve to be gunned down because they're lazy or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe they had a weapon on them.
Maybe they had a weapon on them. Like, well, we'll think about Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. Like, that was a 16-year-old kid with a pack of Skittles in his hoodie, and a fucking security guard gunned him down.
Yeah.
Like, that...
Because he was afraid,
and it's mob mentality. And so I guess I can kind of understand why you'd be afraid of the weasels. Go ahead.
I should clarify that I don't feel specific fear that, like, I'm going to be targeted. Because, right. I mean, for those of you that don't know, I'm a white man. Like, I can probably consider myself to be safe, even if I commit a crime. Like, I'm not going to get shot. But I do, I feel very scared for other people that are people of color who are out just minding their own business. Like, who knows what person is going to come upon them and suddenly feel afraid for basically no reason and then draw down on somebody. Like, these really permanent and like final ways to solve problems that we don't address at all as a society and just like kind of leave them there.
Right.
It really bugs me. Like, people are dead. People die all the time from a problem that is easily fixed, and we don't take any effort to fix it at all.
And that's a deep problem. And one that, like, we can think about in terms of this movie, because there is a lot of policing in this movie.
Sure.
Which is another reason I don't like noir, because it's like, there's a lot of noir detectives that are just like wasted drunk, beating people in the streets, slapping women in the face. I don't like cops anyway. Sorry, cops. Yeah. I don't generally trust you right off the bat. and this is going to sound sort of strange. But on the other side of my family, the other matriarch that I had, who was sort of a terrifying person a lot of the times, would talk a lot about, what were the Nazi police called?
The SS? The Gestapo.
The Gestapo. Sorry. That's right, the Gestapo. I can't believe I can remember that. She would talk about the Gestapo. That stuff scared me a lot more than movies.
Yeah.
Like, my grandmother's telling me these horrifying stories, and, like, my Jewish grandmother, like sitting across from the table with me, just me alone, yeah. waiting for my cousins to get there, telling me about the Gestapo, and then be and like also she had a kind of deep distrust of the police, as sure. did my grandfather, which I always thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
And so, like, there's always that little nodule in the back of my mind being like, are the police gonna, I mean, because the police are a government entity, are they going to start forcing people into camps? Or, I mean, they're already killing people, they're already in the streets killing people of color and putting them into camps, which are prisons.
Yeah, I mean, we round up illegal immigrants and put them into, you know, detention centers.
Detention and centers. And
give them absolutely no recourse at all.
Yep.
I mean, they're not citizens, which...
But they're people.
But they are human beings, and they don't deserve to be treated that way.
Right. And so, Noor sort of glorifies this, like, rogue cop, which I can't... I never really could get behind, because I was always afraid of police.
Yeah, well, I mean, in this one, he's a private detective, and he does have a drinking problem, which goes into that trope that you're talking about, or at least this is from memory because we haven't watched it yet, but I'm pretty sure that he has a drinking problem, and his main issue is that like a cartoon like killed his wife or something like that, so he hates cartoons. He's basically a racist against cartoons, but right. he gets wrapped up in this case where he has to like defend a cartoon,
right,
or investigate on behalf of one,
right.
And yeah, I mean, one, it's a boring thing to talk about, but I do think it'll give us an option to kind of discuss racism and policing and like how that's portrayed, sure. even in stylized media like this that's meant for like kids and a young adult audience.
Yeah.
To be shared, but I guess this would be called a family movie, right? Like if it's a movie you go see as a family because it's got
it's like
things for kids and things for adults. I'm pretty sure it's PG. Yeah. I mean, there's some. I mean, people get murdered in this movie. Like, it's not like a happy cartoon. I mean, there are goofy, like, cringy Looney Tune type things that are gonna happen, like in Space Jam.
Do your dance in the pants with the Space Jam. All right.
Oh man, you know, eventually we're gonna watch Kazam, right? Because we have to watch every movie that had a basketball player in it in the 90s. Because I watched all those.
No.
Movies.
Now I put my foot down at Kazam.
No, yeah, you can't. You're not allowed to put your
foot down. Yes, I am.
The whole premise of this show is that you are forced to watch these movies. You will be forced to watch Kazam. It will happen.
I will not watch Kazam. So you just cannot make me watch Kazam. You could put a grenade in my hand and like pull the pin out and be like, I'm going to kill us all. I'm going to blow this house up unless we watch Kazam. And I'd be like, do it.
Hurry up and get it over with already.
You got a lot of talk paralysis.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm excited to talk about how women are portrayed. I'm excited to talk about policing in America, which is a fun subject.
Oh, don't we love it? If y'all haven't watched White Snacks Problem Areas
on HBO,
it's by no means perfect, but there are some really good and insightful things about policing in America.
Yeah, really deep dive into lots of different contributing factors.
Yeah, exactly.
And different opinions on those factors. Like right. It's, they do get opinions from current and former law enforcement as well. So it's nice to hear opinions from everyone.
Yeah. It's really a cool show. And so I've been thinking a lot about, as lots of people have, policing in America.
Sure.
Because of that show and because of other things. Obviously, thinking isn't enough. Voting, volunteer work, do shit, y'all.
And honestly, money.
Yeah, cash flows everything around us.
Yeah. But we'll talk more about that later and get into it. Yeah, let's take a break. Let's get into
it. You didn't ask me about my expectations.
Oh, I'm sorry. Madam, do you have any expectations for Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Well, now I don't want to.
Well, fuck you then.
No, fuck you, Jordan. No, fuck you.
What expectations do you have for this movie, Rachel? How do you think it's going to make you feel?
I think it's going to make me feel like I need to get up and do things instead of watching a movie. I think the Jessica Rabbit character is going to make me roll my eyes.
I think so.
I think the Roger, I think, and I never had any, like, a lot of sympathy for the actual character Roger Rabbit.
He's an annoying douchebag.
He's an annoying douchebag. He really is. But I think we might glean some interesting things out of it.
Sure. Yeah, I think that we're going to have some interesting conversations. That's my expectation. I think I'm going to hate this movie. Because in typical Robert Zemeckis form, as we've shown on this show with both our first episode of Back to the Future and our fifth episode with Forrest Gump, Robert Zemeckis does not completely understand how women are to be treated, and I don't get the impression that he cares.
Or people of color, or people with disabilities, color, yeah. Or really anyone but white dudes.
So I'm expecting to see a movie that is made by a white man for a white man, who, like, if you want to watch a movie that will not spur any personal growth whatsoever, Who Framed Roger Rabbit is for you. But we're going to confirm that here shortly. So we're going to take a break and be right back. So these look delicious.
Yeah.
That cookie base really solidified well, I think.
I think so too. It baked all the way through. It's nice and brown on the bottom.
Yeah. It looks great.
It does. It looks really tasty. It looks like a sugary ass dessert you'd get in a coffee shop.
And I kind of like it too, because when it's like in the pan, mm-hmm. Since it has, you put like the cookie dough pieces throughout the cream cheese on top. Uh-huh. Like, it's nice because it, like, clearly denotes it as, like, this is not just cheesecake, this is cookie cheesecake.
You can bitch, get ready.
You can see it just by looking at it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to just dive right in.
Dig right in, babe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's pretty much exactly what I expected, which is amazing.
Yeah.
The cookie texture works so well mm-hmm. with it, because it's not, like, overly hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, makes me think, it makes, like, when I think of overly hard, I think of, like, cookie cakes that you get at the grocery store.
Oh, yeah. Man, but, I haven't had a cookie cake in a hot minute.
And I do like those cookie cakes.
Jordan's like, don't get me fucking
Don't get me wrong.
Wrong.
But I would feel a little differently about it if it had this cheesecake topping all over it, and then I had to, like, have some confusing textures.
Confusing
textures, yeah.
Not, like, interesting or nice. Confusing textures.
I don't like to be confused.
I feel like whenever people have their first same-sex experience, that's what they say.
Yeah.
It's confusing. I'm like, it's not nice. You sure?
Well, I mean, what if those people are hetero?
I mean, that's true.
Yeah.
I guess I mean closeted people who have their first same-sex experience.
Well, I mean, that would probably be confusing, too, if you don't really know who you are.
Boy, it's confusing when you're, like, 14. I'll tell you what.
I believe it. Everybody's telling you one thing.
They're like, God will strike you down, little girl. And then you're like, ooh, but those boobs are pretty soft. I'm confused.
But I'm with you on that.
It's also interesting, and what was the other word I used to describe textures? Interesting texture and
confusing?
No, you use that word. But it's really good. I would say these are, I'm pretty proud of these.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Speaking of soft titties, this cream cheese is, like, deliciously soft. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I thought I had overbaked it last night, which can lead to, like, kind of a rubbery texture with mm-hmm. cheesecake. But I gotta say, I think I did all right.
I mean, it's nice and firm, but yeah. It's not, like, it's still soft. I mean, your teeth just, like, slide right through it.
Right.
And
Jordan would be some kind of food critic.
Some kind of food critic, yeah.
And you're just like, your teeth just slide right through it. Right by it.
I'm the working man's food critic.
You're like, later, this may or may not hurt my butthole.
This tastes good on my tongue. Feels good on my tongue. The end.
Yeah.
Mm. But yeah, I think I'm going to say this is a delight.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of
this. It is cheesecake with cookies in it, basically.
What's not to love?
What's not to love? It's exactly how you imagine it's going to be. It's delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah. You say delight too?
Oh, hell yeah. Not to toot my own motherfucking horn, but...
Well, let's get on to watching the disaster that is Who Framed Roger Rabbit, because I'm pretty sure that's how we're going to rate it.
Pretty sure.
We'll be right back. So, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? After this movie was over, I was sitting on the toilet having my constitutional.
And your very spicy constitutional?
And laughing my ass off because I was reading about this movie and, you know, Judge Doom, the character played by... Judge Doom, the character played by Christopher Lloyd, is the main villain of this movie.
I love that.
So he eventually got that part, but... Tim Curry auditioned for this role.
We were just talking about Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah. That's and crazy. Guess what? He was turned down for the role because they said he was, quote, too terrifying for the movie. And I thought that was so great. Oh my God. I was just laughing my ass off in there because it's I can imagine Tim Curry doing this part and it being too fucking scary for kids.
They're just like, no, Tim, yeah. Tim, you gotta dial it back, friend.
But nevertheless, that character scares the shit out of me. And I'm sorry, I just had to get that out there ahead of time because it was so funny in my mind. I had to let it out and share it with you.
Like, wouldn't that be the best reason to get rejected? That wouldn't even be a hurtful rejection. Yeah. It's just like, no, Tim, you're too scary.
You're too good, man. Oh, man. That would be an awesome way to get rejected from a role.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Rachel, give us that DVD block, the DVD box blurb.
Another Zemeckis film that isn't incapable. And then, like, under that, like, that's the review, you know, like, they have, like, 2.5 stars. Another yeah. Zemeckis film that isn't incapable.
Yeah.
And then under that, the summary would be, Harry Stout P.I.
Yeah. A George Costanza type.
A George Costanza type individual who I've already forgotten about.
Yeah.
Tromps through Toontown to the beat of a very familiar drum.
Oh, I love that. It's very poetic.
Yeah, thanks.
It's a good description, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie is very basic. It's, We're trotting on familiar ground here.
Sure.
But we were talking about this through the whole movie. Overall, like, this is a pretty well-constructed movie.
So...
You gotta give it to them.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, we just watched this movie on Netflix called Annihilation.
With Natalie Portman. Yeah.
Natalie Portman.
It's getting a lot of praise.
It's getting a lot of praise. And maybe everybody's gonna be mad at me about this. But I thought that movie was pretty bad.
I did too, yeah.
Pretty fucking bad.
Visually stunning.
Yeah.
But a lot of problems with, like, story delivery.
Yeah.
In particular.
Yeah, and characterization. And I feel like that's a common thread amongst movies right now.
Yeah.
Is them having a hard time... Excuse me.
They're definitely having a hard time...
Excuse me.
Showing and not telling.
Sure, yeah. And, like, actually developing characters that I care about.
Yeah, exactly.
And so this movie, like, doesn't demand that I care about the characters deeply.
Sure.
Unlike a movie like Annihilation, where they're just like, care about this character and why she's going into the shimmer. This is emotionally meaningful.
We're just going to tell you what you're supposed to feel.
You should feel scared, Samantha. Or yeah. Jessica Parker, or whatever your name is.
So Who Framed Roger Rabbit does a really good job of just letting things naturally flow.
Right.
You feel pretty immersed in the world, and they cover everything for you. Everything is thought of in advance.
Yeah.
They set up all the little details that come into play later. And it's a very clean-cut movie. Just it made is. Well. It's designed so that your brain doesn't have to wonder, like, wait, where did they get a fucking portable hole from?
Yeah.
Like, hey, hold on, what are the rules for this? No, it's all been explained to you in, you know, very natural ways, where it's just showing these characters in their lives.
And it's not overcomplicated. Yeah. Which is there's something to be said about that. And even though I despise Forrest Gump, it is a simple, like, pretty elegant setup.
Back to the Future was not as much when I remember us talking about that one. It had a lot of exposition in it.
It did. It had problems.
I mean, this movie was made 2 or 3 years after Back to the Future, Who Framed Roger Rabbit was.
I didn't know.
So I think maybe at this point, maybe he had kind of learned how to do a little bit better with the, you know, narrative.
You know, I relearn about every 6 months or so that Robert Zemeckis made Back to the Future and Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah. It's, and Forrest Gump. So.
No, I know Forrest Gump. I always remember that he made Forrest Gump. But for some reason, it just, like, slips out of my memory as soon as I hear it that he made this movie or he made Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then I'm like, shit, Robert Zemeckis did Back to the Future? Like, every time.
I mean, it makes sense. He does a lot of these, like, practical and animation effects in his movies, so this is, like, kind of his thing.
Yeah. I mean, he's pretty skilled.
Yeah. I mean, I think he'd gotten better at this point from Back to the Future, though, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. Hell, yeah.
This movie feels tight. It feels really well constructed.
Yeah.
You know, it's based off a book?
Yeah.
Like an actual novel?
I heard that was a terrible book.
I believe it. Like,
yeah.
I was reading about it. Apparently, like, Walt Disney, like, bought the rights to the book, like, immediately as it came out.
Whoa.
And it was a pure business move. This whole movie was a pure business move on Disney's part. Because, so they release it through Touchstone, which is, like, Disney but not Disney. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a subsidiary company.
I had no idea.
And so they release it that way so they don't have to make a big deal out of it. Like, oh, it's Disney presents this. Like, associate this with Disney. No, they're going to associate this with Touchstone and keep it its own thing. But they advertise with their own characters in there, just like Ready Player One, where they have, like, this is like a mishmash of, like, oh, who's who in the cartoon world? Look, there's Porky Pig. Look, there's fucking Mickey Mouse.
But, like, it's not as irritating because there's an actual plot and things that have been set up beforehand. And also, while the protagonist is a bouncing, immature bunny rabbit, he's still more interesting than that little pale-faced schlub in Ready Player One.
Yeah, but, like,
ugh.
So this is where we get to the point where there's a Spielberg conspiracy.
What?
A conspielbergsy, if you will.
Are we already at conspielbergsy time?
Yes, because, so when this movie was getting produced and they had this idea of putting all their cartoon characters in there, you know, Disney only has the rights to its own characters. So it enlists the help of one Steven Spielberg to come together. He gets a really favorable contract where he has, like, massive creative control. And they give him a ton of money, but he also goes and negotiates the use of all these characters from, like, Warner Brothers and all these other different cartoon companies, Looney Tunes and all that shit. And so he, like, kind of brokers the deal where they get all these different figures in here. So now Ready Player One is starting to make a little more sense to me. Like, Spielberg has done this to us before and made a shit ton of money.
He was just, like, a little sneakier about it.
I don't think so, because at the time when this movie was marketed, it was like, hey, look, this is a movie that has Disney characters and Warner Brothers characters and all the people that you recognize from cartoons.
Right.
This was like the remember that movie of 1987.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And I don't think anybody's disputing that. What I'm saying is that this has it has setup, it has rules, it has structure. It kept me engaged. Mostly, except for the Zemeckis Zero Zone, which is what I call...
the Zemeckis Zero Zone. You said that mid-movie, and I was like, yep.
Yep. The Zemeckis Zero Zone is the spot at about, like, an hour and 10 in Zemeckis movies, where you're just like, what the fuck? This is dragging ass. What are we doing, Zemeckis? And he just, like... It's just, if it was a visual, it would just be, like, an open field and, like, a grown man out there picking flowers for, like...
Hurry up, Grandpa.
Like, come on. We have things to do.
Yeah, there's a... the term that you like to use is the second act drag, which is a familiar case, especially with like 80s and 90s movies.
Yeah.
They're all just slightly too long. This movie's an hour 45, and it really should be an hour and a half.
I agree.
For the story that it has.
I agree.
And so I think that's where that drag comes from, because they start having like all these kind of like contrived action sequences in the middle there, where it's like, oh, now we're going to show off the special effects for a little while. Don't worry about the story. We're just going to kind of piddle around.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. And, you know, I get it. They worked hard, and they want to try and justify to the consumer...
us.
...that this is a quote-unquote blockbuster movie. So you're going to have a lot of blockbuster elements in it.
Yeah, which is so, like, heartbreaking for me all the time.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, can we just tell a cool story, please? That's no. all I ask. I just want to tell a cool story. We don't have to put the extra shit in there. There's, like... It's like Bad Santa, which I think is one of the most perfect films. P.S.
Bad Santa is a perfect film, yes.
It's a really
quote, Rachel Smith.
Bad Santa is a perfect film. Well, it's got its problems, too. Yeah. But as far as like narrative structure and just telling a story and like giving us laughs, but at the same time allowing us to feel deeply.
Yeah.
This movie, there's also a thing that Zemeckis does. I can't remember. I wrote it down somewhere, but that where he will present like a something kind of deep and hurtful, mm-hmm. like his brother's death and his stuff still set up across the desk exactly as his brother left.
Yeah, it's done in a pretty touching manner.
It really is. Yeah. And then, but then he cracks a joke. He's like, "Don't feel too bad." It's like it's like the he's the granddaddy of bathos.
Well, that's what Roger Rabbit is there for, is to break the tension, like out of because I feel like there's a lot of that in this movie, and it may be one of the themes, or it may just be like kind of inherent in the subject matter.
Sure,
but it kind of has this theme of, you know, taking things too seriously and like letting that go. I mean, the whole main character arc, Eddie Valiant. I said Valentine earlier by mistake, but it's Eddie Valiant, who. Like, used to be, like, a silly, goofy, like, fun person. And you can see it in the history that he had with his brother. And then after his brother's death, he kind of became, like, very banal. And, like, his growth through the movie is to become, like, silly and goofy again. And to, like, laugh again.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of like... Shit, I don't know. It's kind of like this whole movie's message, in a way.
Yeah. Although, Zemeckis also does this thing where he'll, like... acting like he's a good ally of people of color, where he's just like, look at this little thing, I threw it in there for you people of color.
Or
you're
talking about like the theme with the tunes kind of being segregated and treated as second class citizens.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm always questioning what Zemeckis is trying to tell us with that.
Yeah. And you know, that is definitely a major theme of this movie. I feel like they never broach it completely, but it's like ever present there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, the toons are kind of treated as second-class citizens. Yeah. They're oppressed a bit. They have a fucking crazy-ass justice system where they, like, appoint a judge to go around and just, like, murder or execute toons if they do something wrong.
Yeah.
And he has a goon squad. Like, it's pretty fucked up. I mean, it really is kind of a... I mean, we can still see it today, and that's sad since we're, like, 30 years later. And we're seeing a worse version of this, like, all around us.
I mean, let's just dive into the policing aspect of it.
Let's do it, yeah.
Let's do it. Because we brought up earlier, too, that Zemeckis sort of, like, broaches that, but we're not sure what he's talking about. And so it can be kind of dangerous.
Sure.
Because I'm like, if you're talking about race, then what you've said is these toons should be in the ghetto and otherized... because they're inherently dangerous.
Right, yeah, because all of the toons have, like, kind of, like, demigod-like powers to where they can really affect the real world in, like, crazy cartoon logic ways.
Right.
So, like, I can see how in the logic of this movie, like, a toon would be dangerous, and it would actually probably be best if they weren't around humans on a regular basis, just by their nature alone.
Right.
So when you equate that with race, it's not the same thing, and that's kind of an insidious message.
It is.
We use the word insidious a lot on this podcast.
I think we just like that word.
I do like it. It's a very effective word, I think, and I think it's very descriptive of...
very insidious.
...the subject matter.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It is insidious.
It kind of reinforces something negative, and I'm not sure that this was even an intentional thing on Zemeckis' part.
Well, it generally isn't with, like, liberal white men, but it's still just as harmful. It's like Michael Buford talking about how if you throw a baseball and it breaks the window, is the window still broken? Like, even if you didn't mean it to be?
Right. Yeah. I suppose so. I mean, I just, but I do think that if that window's broken and the kid is sorry and didn't mean to, or the kid is laughing and being like, ha, fuck you.
Oh, there's difference,
That's different, yeah.
Yeah, there's a difference, but at the same time, Zemeckis suffers from that.
There's a lot of broken windows in Zemeckis' neighborhood, is what you're saying.
Yeah, like, this is the real meaning of the broken windows policy.
Yeah, and in that way, I think this is great. We've watched three Zemeckis movies, and now we're finally able to classify this director as just being a careless person.
He's just kind of careless.
He's not out there trying to hurt anybody, but he's bumping into a lot of people in the crowd.
Yeah.
And he's not saying he's sorry.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it is what it is. You see that every day.
Yeah, you do. But I still think that means that doesn't mean we should just let him swing his arms around in a crowd and he's like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, is nobody going to walk up to this guy and just say like, hey man, take it easy.
So can we get you to a hospital, sir? Let us help you.
I fucking love this metaphor. It's really, it's really getting me right now. I'm loving it.
Robert Zemeckis just bumping into people.
Robert Zemeckis is a careless man on the subway.
He's just like swinging his arms like they're numb around. I mean, he's got like headphones in. He's kind of like doodly bopping along.
Yeah.
I mean, I would agree with that. So as far as like racial stereotypes.
Yeah.
And what did you? We noticed a few things.
Well, there was that scene where they're at the, they call it the Toon Review, but it's for humans only. It's like a theater where a bunch of humans go to watch toons perform.
Right.
And, so Jessica Rabbit performs her, like, song and dance.
Sexy song.
The sexy song, which is totally just there for no purpose other than to titillate us. There's plenty of ways they could have introduced that character, but they did it in that way.
Yeah.
So that was a deliberate choice.
Yeah.
But her backup band is, it's like a smoky jazz club type band.
Yeah.
And they're all like black crows.
They're all black crows.
And they kind of like behave in this like old school like jive manner that was like pretty racist.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't feel that it was, again, I didn't feel it was an intentional thing. I feel like it was really just careless and like somebody wasn't thinking at all.
Yeah, they were just like, you know, it was a funny cartoon, Heckle and Jekyll. Let's put that shit up there. Yeah, write that down, Jim. Heckle and Jekyll playing instruments for Jessica Rabbit, right?
I mean, if this stuff was intentional, I feel like it would be much more deliberately racist. I do feel like there's a part with a cartoon bullet that is a Native American stereotype.
That
one was pretty bad.
So I really want to get like a gong, a small gong for this moment in the podcast where I can ring it and be like, dong.
Yeah.
That's racist. That's what it's going to be.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's like there's absolutely no rhyme or reason to it. It just exists and you're just like, okay, whatever, we're just gonna just reduce this to a single caricature. God, it was pretty blatant.
And like American Indians get it the worst. I feel like they get it bad.
Well, we talked about this a little bit before, and I think it is because the average person does not encounter a Native American in their day-to-day. It's just one of those things where they are a very silent minority because they're just not as great a number as any other group. You're just not going to see them as much.
Well, in certain areas.
Yeah, for sure. But in most areas, that's true.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
That's
unfortunate.
Let's see, what else did I write on here? Oh, Nazi boots.
What was that? There's like a box of singing boots in the Acme factory that they knock over, and they all have different personalities. Boots are like goose kicking, like Nazi goose stepping, like Nazi soldiers.
Yeah, and why couldn't he pick up those boots and put them in the turpentine?
Oh my god, yeah.
Instead of that sad little like squeaky shoe.
Yeah, we talked about how, during the movie, we talked about how evil Judge Doom is.
He's awesome.
When he shows up and he grabs that tune and dips it in that turpentine mix to kill it. He's like, he's just proving a point to these humans that he has absolute power, and he's just gonna like execute this totally innocent tune.
Yeah.
That just got like knocked out of its box.
Yeah.
My God, what a despicable man. That was a horrifying scene for me. I remember you were just like brushing it off, like no big deal.
Oh.
Your cold and callous heart.
When I was a kid, it really bothered me.
You have a heart that is black as coal.
I do.
Black as coal.
I just said that Bad Santa was a perfect movie. Yes. I think that our listeners have established that I have a dark heart.
Are you Willie Soak, but sober? Is that who you are?
Am I oh, sober man. Willie Soak? Yeah, maybe.
That's hilarious. Oh, man.
I'll see.
We got to watch Bad Santa again soon. That's a great movie. I wish it was Christmas time.
I wish that's my favorite Christmas movie, y'all. Bad Santa. Anyway, looks like I swapped Lord of the Rings for Bad Santa right now, as far as perfect media.
Yeah, but I mean, like, so we didn't really get into policing. We just all of a sudden talked about some racist caricatures.
Sure.
But there are a lot of similarities between the way that the policing is done in this movie towards cartoons as there are for, in reality, with...
communities of color.
Communities of color, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why it was like a little touch and go for me with Zemeckis, because I'm like, what are you saying about people of color? I know you're trying to be... Maybe you're trying to be a good ally, but... what are we saying about... You know, people of color, if they are how they are related to tunes, like,
yeah,
and so that's why I was like, is he making a metaphor? And so I think maybe he is.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was, but I think it just wasn't very well thought through.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there are a lot of aspects like with these weasels have kind of like. Basically, absolute power. You can't really stop them from coming into your house or doing anything or like stopping you in the street. There's like very little oversight, and people get treated based on a certain class distinction that they have.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that it's very clearly a parallel.
Yeah. So, do you think that parallel was handled well as far as how the police interacted with the tune community?
Well, no, because they fucking straight up murder innocent people.
Yeah.
With no consequences.
You mean in Toontown or in real life?
Fucking both.
Yeah,
that's the point.
Both.
That's the fucking point right there.
Yeah, that's the real. That's. Yeah, we just touched on.
We're 30 years past Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and Martin Luther King is rolling over in his goddamn grave.
He's just like, what the fuck, guys? This is not what I meant. That's not a direct quote. No slander intended.
Yeah. Oh, but my God.
Isn't there a Boondocks episode where Martin Luther King comes back and he's like, oh, yeah, fuck.
Everybody, like, nobody wants to listen to him anymore and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And he just ends up being, like, a sad janitor or something. I can't remember. God.
That's he just a great gives show. Up.
Yeah, that is a great show.
So anyway... Let's see what I also have on my list.
Let's talk about Jessica Rabbit.
All right.
Yeah. Let's get into
it. Let's do it. Let's jump in. Go ahead.
And women in this movie in general.
Sure.
There is actually one other female character I completely forgot about.
Yeah.
But what the fuck is her name? Eddie Valiant's girlfriend.
Dolores,
is that it? I think it is.
I feel like it's Dolores.
I feel like Bob Hoskins said that in a husky voice a couple times, like, Dolores.
Dolores.
I like your impression.
Dolores. Dolores.
Yeah. No. But yeah.
Come at me, Bob.
I'll that's great. Good. Yeah. You know what? I do remember that her name is Dolores. And I'm actually impressed that the movie was able to allow me to remember that.
I remembered it, and then you just took it.
Well, yeah, but the movie ingrained it in you. So at least that character had a name. That was her name. It was told several times. I should have known it. I should have known it, and it's not my fault.
Well, what's probably going to happen is we're going to look it up after the podcast and just be like, her name was Florence. And we'll be like, shit.
It'll be just like fucking Dom DeLuise in Blazing Saddles when he's dancing around and he's just like trying to show him how to do the fucking dance. And then he steps in the puddle.
Yeah.
Shit.
Shit.
That's the kind of shit we mean.
Yes.
Yes.
It's not that hard.
Yeah, overall, so I liked this movie, but yeah. it had some problem stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Jessica Rabbit is a big part of that.
Yeah, she really is.
Yeah. I mean, she does have, like, the bare minimum for a supporting character, I suppose.
Okay.
In that, like, she is doing things, like, to kind of both thwart and also help this conspiracy that's kind of going on in the background.
Yeah.
It's like she does have a role in the events that, like, play out.
Right.
But it's pretty small.
It is.
You know, I mean, it's... I'm giving it a pretty generous view to even say that, you know, she has a character to her.
Yeah, she really doesn't. She has kind of this, like, husky, sexy lounge singer voice and a really... Like, the camera focuses on her cartoon breasts a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously, like, the biggest part of her character. Like, not... No pun intended. I just mean, really...
Ha.
Really, though, no pun intended. I just kind of said that. But, speaking of puns, that ridiculous part where they're tied up and that weasel tries to grope her breasts and, like, a bear trap comes out and snaps his hand and Bob Hoskins is like... Nice booby trap. What the fuck movie?
Nice booby trap.
Oh, man.
I want my Bob Hoskins impressions to get progressively more bizarre.
Yeah, actually, you're starting to sound more like a demon than Bob Hoskins. I mean, Bob Hoskins is more of a gremlin than a demon, so I don't know that I like where it's going.
So
Jessica Rabbit.
Jessica Rabbit, let's
and her big ol' boobs.
Big ol' boobs. Yeah. Man, we are just full of references today. What's wrong with us?
we're just as bad as the Conspielbergsy.
Yeah, the things we despise, we are becoming.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's
the easy way out. I mean, we're not getting paid millions of dollars.
We're just two people
that are fucked up on a couch. Like, Spielberg is out there, he's doing this shit and getting paid millions of dollars. And we're all suckers because we pay for it.
Oh, yeah.
You can do better than me, guys. You can do way better.
Please do. And don't really listen to us all the time. Sometimes we're wrong a lot.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, make your own informed opinions. Do research. Listen to me on that one, though, okay? Like, do research. School is good for you. Read books.
Yeah.
Hang out with your friends without electronic devices and fucking eat some vegetables sometimes, dudes. That's it. I don't think that we're even on Who Framed Roger Rabbit anymore. This is like life coaching with Rachel right now.
Yeah, there you go. Renaming it.
And also, like, Jessica Rabbit, like, uses her sexuality in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that she claims in the movie to kind of have, or I feel like the movie is trying to claim that she has agency over her sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like it really does it very well.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if it's going to tell me, like, oh, you know, I'm a one rabbit woman or whatever, and, like, all this other bullshit that she, you know, I don't know. This movie's a liar. That's what I'm going to say.
This movie is a liar.
This movie is a liar.
Quoth Jordan Pirellas, this movie is a liar. I'm struggling talking about Jessica Rabbit is because it's just the same old boring shit that always happens. It's just like, we get it. You drew this lady with big jugs. You jacked off to it. You thought it was great. We understand. Can we just stop doing that now and, like, start seeing people as women, or women as people, rather?
Yeah.
Women as people who have desires and wants all their own, who can do shit. Just like you can?
Yeah.
Oh, you can't? Then let some women writers in, okay? Fuck.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting because this movie is, like, all about putting a twist on, like, an old genre. So I can hear people out there who would say, like, oh, but, you know, she's got to be, like, a bombshell because that's the noir trope. And they're trying to retread those themes. But, I mean, if you're going to have fucking crazy-ass cartoons in your noir... Like, you can upend some other elements of that trope, too, and make them a little more interesting, and it's fine, and we still get it.
Well, that's, like, the same problem that I had with Annihilation. Like, this shit is pretend, y'all. Assassin's Creed is pretend. This came out of some fucking Canadian dude's brain, okay? Yeah. It's just pretend. Why can't you make things more interesting that happen in pretend land? Because anything can happen in pretend land.
Yeah.
Like, why does it have to be a crocodile shark hybrid? Why can't it be something unimaginable?
You're so funny.
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess this is going to be a dual Annihilation episode, because that movie, it was on our minds quite a bit.
Yeah. Fuck that movie.
Yeah. A movie that got way too much praise. And so, yeah, it's strange to watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit and be, like, relieved by the storytelling compared to, like, the last movie that you watched.
Yeah, I fucking wrote down, because I was just like, you know what modern movie makers need to watch is Roger Who Framed Roger Rabbit, because they're doing it better than you.
Yeah.
Like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit has a really tight structure. Just imitate that structure for me, please.
Yeah.
Like, and it can be dramatic. Like, that's the cool thing. Lift the template and be like, emotional core. Like, put that a little emotional core right here. Okay. Yeah. Now, here's an all right place for some levity.
Yeah, exactly. People could learn a lot from a lot of film students could learn a lot from this movie. For yeah. Sure.
I mean, I think that if I was teaching a film class, I would, a cool one would be like, people who are really good at the technical aspect, like, call it like technical geniuses or something, like, yeah, really good at like following a structure and not upending it too much, but really making it like interesting, and like you care about the characters enough and you walk away feeling decently satisfied. And I would have I would have E.T. in there. Oh, I would have Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I would have Forrest Gump.
For sure.
Like, this is a whole genre that's like, film students need to understand that there's a side to that that it needs to be respected.
This is like, hands down, basic filmmaking, it feels like to me. This is like how, if you're not even going to try to, break the mold or shoot for the moon or do anything special, like, you're making a Zemeckis movie, you're making a Spielberg movie.
Right, and they know it.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's more than fine.
There's not like a bunch of innovative shit that's going to happen, but they are effectively going to communicate emotions and ideas to you through the medium of film, and that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll take it.
Exactly.
And that's, and not only will we take it, like, it's just something that I think a lot of modern movie makers are sort of lacking.
Yeah.
Which is like a writer's, like, not having 84 writers on the damn thing.
Yeah, the writing by committee, it definitely shows in a lot of movies that are just, like, all over the place.
They are. And, like, even if one person's vision is a little bit skewed, at least it's consistent.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, at the same time, like, who are they going to listen to? Like, people like us, or the people that are giving them millions of dollars to just continue doing that over and over? These huge, like, high-production movies are guaranteed moneymakers. Like, even with failures like Solo, they're still making, millions of dollars. It's not as many millions as they hope to.
They're like, oh, Don, I can't go to that vacation in Belarus. That's not a real good vacation destination. Never mind.
Vacation in Belarus? I don't know. That sounds intriguing and exotic. That sounds pretty great, I think.
Yeah, except for, like, no, I don't know that for a fact, so I'm not going to say it.
Oh, yeah.
About Belarus. I just know that, like, there are Belarusian metal bands who have to be super duper careful because the Belarusian government, if they say anything against Allah, will come and, like, arrest them.
Yeah. I'm just saying that if you have a lot of money, you're pretty much safe anywhere, because there are places for you rich people. Like, you'll have a safe place to be in any town that you go to on Earth.
Yeah, well, soak it up now, because we're coming for you. We're coming for your political seats, and we are going to upend this shit.
Wow.
That's a threat.
Bold words from Rachel. News at 10.
News at 10.
I want to talk about Bob Hoskins real quick. The main character in this movie. Because he's an interesting choice.
He's swarthy.
He is swarthy, yeah. So he's a British actor. But there's a part where he comes out of the shower, I guess, or out of a drunken haze or a drunken nap or something. And he takes his shirt off, and he is a George Costanza-looking motherfucker, for sure.
Yeah.
This is a very stout, short man, very dark and hairy. Like, he's got hair all over his back. This was a different time. This guy would not be a lead nowadays.
Absolutely not. He would be, he'd have to be some, like, baby-faced... Babyface.
It would be fucking Chris Hemsworth. That's who it would be. Yeah, it'd be
Chris Hemsworth, and that's boring. Like, what makes Danny DeVito so awesome is partially the way he looks.
He's a very unique looking man. Is it like it's? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar with Bob Hoskins here. He's a very interesting main character to have.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is an example of where it's okay for movies to have male leads that are very unconventional like this.
Yeah.
But it's not okay for movies to have female leads that are unconventional.
And it really never has been.
Yeah. With most, I would say 95% of movies that have female leads have pretty much the same type of person.
Right. Like Natalie Portman for Annihilation.
Like saying like a body shape and a bone structure type of person. They all kind of look like Hollywood movie stars.
You know what they look like? They look like what you would imagine some sort of elvish creature in the woods. That it's like, and it's like a white deer, and it just sort of stares at you and has huge eyes, but it looks like you could kill it pretty easy.
Yeah.
That's how they look. They're really like pretty and fragile, but like, that's why I like Spy with Melissa McCarthy. Like,
yeah.
She's an unconventional-looking actress, and she's, right, super capable.
I would like to see more roles, like, more dramatic roles for, you know, people of size or people of just different body shapes in general. Yeah. Like, I like Fargo, the TV show, for instance.
Yeah.
With, has that lead sheriff's deputy who is not... by any means, like, she looks like a Midwestern average woman.
She does.
And it, she's a fascinating character. And I love seeing something different besides, like, the person who's in the fucking beauty pageants.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
Those people exist, and it's fine. But you've had your time. Representation has been there for a long time. Let's see some new types of women.
Plus, it allows you to linger in the world more. If you, if you like, are one of those people who's just like, ah, fuck that, I'm not a feminist, you're getting there. You'll get there, baby. But for now, just think of it as a practical thing. Like, the more unconventional-looking characters that are in movies, the more immersed in the world you can get and escape into.
Yeah.
Because, like, when you look around just the average grocery store or whatever, there are old people, there are people of size, there are people with disabilities. That makes things more immersive and more real.
Yeah, like in this movie alone, there's a man with dwarfism that's just there, and they don't ever say anything about it. He's just another one of the unemployed guys at the bar.
Right.
There's a,
And you could argue that Ben Hoskins is he's a man of color because he's Romani.
Right,
He's Romani and Jewish. And so, like, I could argue that he's like an unconventional man of color in the lead role there.
Most definitely, yeah. I mean, at the very least, this is a very unconventional lead character. But we see that more often than not with male leads.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But it is interesting, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, like, talking about diversity, I wrote diverse cast of weasels.
What did you say? Like, oh, there's a Mexican, there's a mentally ill person.
Yeah, there's like, all these communities that, like, really get representation, but they're villains.
Yeah, they're all villains.
Like, there's a Sicilian.
Yeah, they all have this kind of style to them as different stereotypes of just different things. I don't know. I wasn't, like, offended or anything, but it was just kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, it was really weird. I thought it was one of those, like, is it, you know how Zemeckis says that good intention?
Yeah.
Like, was this with good intention?
Well, you know, you were talking about getting a little gong earlier, so you can dong and say that's racist. I don't think this is a gong moment. It's maybe more of a, like, light cymbal brushing moment, where you're just like,
that might be racist. Let's consider it a little more.
Just a little light dusting of racist.
Right there.
It's not much.
Yeah. It could be a jazz simple, a jazz, like a, you know what I'm talking about, like a jazz simple. With
the wire brush. Yeah.
It's a little racist.
Yeah, just a little hiss of racism.
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of that, I wrote down this other note whenever they were in the bar. Like the first African-American man that we see.
And I think the only man that we see.
Yeah, the only African-American guy. And yeah, he's the only one. He's a one-armed veteran who's sweeping up this juke joint. And he has a purple heart.
Yeah.
Who is this guy?
And Doom comes in and like sneezes on his jacket or some shit like that. He's a fucking evil-ass man.
He is. He's just like, look, he stomps on all these communities.
But yeah, like when we talk about people of color in this movie, I think that guy is the only one. He's an unnamed character who, admittedly, for an extra, is a very interesting extra to have in the background. Like, yeah. My God.
Yeah, and I think that that's a
what's thing. That guy's story? It's interesting.
Yeah, I think that's something that Zemeckis and Spielberg do well a lot of the time.
Yeah.
When they're not, like, just gazing into a mirror like a parakeet and are actually applying their gifts.
Yeah.
Fucking dicks. Is that they're really good at details.
Sure.
And sometimes they'll be like, here's this little detail in the back, just so that it makes the world more believable. And I think they're good at that.
Yeah, they are good at that, I think. Mm-hmm. So there's this part in the bar, with that part, when Judge Doom comes in and sneezes on, or wipes his hands or whatever on that black guy's army jacket.
That war hero's army
that
jacket.
That war hero's army jacket. America!
Yeah.
God bless the USA! America, everybody, America.
Well, we're being... I see what you're saying. I'm like, aren't we being a little tone deaf here?
Yeah, yes, on purpose.
I just got it. I'm dumb.
But yeah.
I was like, oh shit, maybe you shouldn't say that.
No. Sarcasm completely, 100% there.
Being facetious.
Yes, exactly. I do not hold those views whatsoever. So Doom comes in and he like wants to execute Roger Rabbit or something. Put him in the dip.
Yeah.
And Eddie Valiant gives him some booze.
Mm-hmm.
So he like starts getting crazy because they've shown that he gets crazy when he's on booze, and he like starts to explode, and it's like the guy can't handle him anymore.
Yeah.
But like in preparation for all of that nonsense and hullabaloo, Bob Hoskins, like, reaches over and grabs Dolores' cleavage and just, like, yanks her down. And he's like, get down under the bar.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of an odd scene. Like, I think it was meant for laughs.
I think so. It's like, look, he almost exposed her breast.
Like, you pulled on her titties. Isn't that funny?
Laugh, you idiot. Pay us money.
I mean, she's his girlfriend and all, and I feel like they've probably had a sexual relationship up to this point, so it's not like I feel like he assaulted her or anything, but it's definitely inappropriate for this movie.
Yeah, like, if you were to need to pull me down, and I would really prefer if you didn't pull my tits out while you were doing it.
That's a sure way to get the fucking burglar's attention. Yeah. My God, don't do that. That's like in the handbook for safety during criminal operations.
Don't distract him with the tit.
Yeah.
It's on every page. It's just
that's how you get executed. Yeah. God damn it.
Don't pull her titties out.
Oh my God. But yeah, I just felt that was an uncomfortable moment. And I was just wondering, like, why the fuck that was... Who decided that? Who was sitting there on the side, and they're like, and now, like, you know, get her to duck. And somebody's like, hey, Rob, why don't you have him grab her titties and pull her down that way? That's pretty funny. And all these guys, like, just kind of go, yeah, it is a little funny. Just do that. And then that's how I got in the movie.
And it was just, like, boom mic operator who said that. He was just like...
It's like joking to his buddies, and the director overhears him, and he's like, that's actually a pretty fucking good idea.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, bro. They high five.
Yeah, but then those guys never get paid, except for their boom mic operation skills.
Yeah,
exactly. And they get paid for their ideas. That's bullshit. I hope that doesn't really happen, and that was like that was truly a fictional scenario we just made up.
Well, I certainly hope so, because it's terrifying. That's like Tim Curry level of terrifying.
I think that we should have a scale of men that are terrifying, starting with, who is the least terrifying? Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, like going from Mr. Rogers and like, you know, 11 off the charts is like that naked man that was standing in the darkness in Hereditary. That's like, that's the scale that we have.
It's like, naked guy in Hereditary! Naked guy in Hereditary!
Yeah. I was wondering how long it was going to take Hollywood to figure out that, like, naked men smiling at you from the shadows is the most horrifying thing on Earth.
They're just like, oh, shit, women are afraid of that? Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't matter the context. If you're a naked man in the shadows smiling at someone, you're wrong.
Yeah, you know.
Creepy. No one wants to see that.
It could be.
Your wife doesn't want to see that, man.
Well, if they had a pre-agreed upon contract that he's like, baby, sometimes I'm gonna loom over you.
I gotta tell you ahead of time, I'm a loomer.
I gotta
sign this prenup. It just acknowledges that you agree to my looming and my general creepness.
And my general creepness.
Oh yeah. My god.
The funniest thing is the last note that I wrote down, which, yeah. Like, this is totally, this whole episode has sort of come off the rails, because this movie sort of comes off the rails.
It does, it's zany.
It's zany. Is, where did they find a similarly built gymnast who played Bob Hoskins?
Yeah, Bob Hoskins does a fucking whole song and dance number, like, mm-hmm. literally, which is insane. Like, who the fuck, like, I wonder, too, if he was, like, purposely phoning it in, or if that's what he felt like the character would be like, kind of this dry,
oh, yeah,
like,
I think
off-key, like, not very good performance.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I think so. But I also can imagine them saying, like, now's the part, Bob, where you sing and dance, and he's like, the fuck are you talking about? And they're like, no, really, you're going to sing and dance this part. And he's like,
English, though. Yeah, it has to be. Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about?
Oh, my God. Yes.
That's my Bob Hoskins British impression.
Any Anglophiles out there?
Bob Hoskins out of character.
Back off.
What the hell are you talking about, governor? That's Bob Hoskins.
Yeah. Any Anglophiles out there, you back off. He's taken.
I mean, that's... we should mention that this guy is the guy who plays Shmee in Hook.
Oh, right.
Which we watched and reviewed recently.
Yeah.
Bob Hoskins is in your childhood more than you think. He's around, like, all over the place.
He's like your divorced dad.
This hairy, sweaty man that breathes heavily has been watching you from the other side of the silver screen for decades.
Whoa.
Just know that. Know that as you go to sleep tonight.
Bob Hoskins will haunt your dreams.
As you lay your head down to slumber, remember that Bob Hoskins has been watching you.
Also, this was when Metallica was good. Remember that. When this movie
Were they
was
still
made.
In 1988?
Yes. Are you kidding me?
Are you sure?
I'm 100% sure.
What albums were coming out?
Kill 'Em All was earlier. I believe this was Puppets.
Are you sure?
Was 90s. This was...
was it really?
Yes.
That's insane. I feel like Metallica lost it well before the 90s.
You feel that way.
I just am not remembering time correctly, I think.
Maybe I'm not.
I gotta look it up. I don't remember... You know what? You're right. This was around the right time.
Yeah,
like, Load and Reload wasn't until, like, mid to late 90s.
Yeah, it was, that's like, when 95 they started fucking or 96.
Up. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, you might be right.
Yeah, I think it was either Ride the Lightning or maybe Master of Puppets.
So they were still good. Megadeth was still good.
Slayer
was fucking killing it.
Slayer was the goddamn best.
I didn't listen to a lot of Anthrax.
I mean, who does?
I mean, they're considered one of the big four. I think that they were kind of like just added in so somebody could make it four instead of three.
Maybe. Or maybe somebody's was friends with the lead singer of Anthrax.
I mean, Anthrax is great. They're just... I don't feel like they're on the same level as Metallica, Megadeth, and
Oh, you know what
Slayer.
Else was coming out? It was like Prime Bathory Time and Prime... Venom Time. And Prime, like...
You are too legit for me. I don't know any of that shit.
Yes, you do.
I know Bathory.
You know Bathory.
Yeah.
Bathory is the blackest of black.
Like your cold, coal black heart.
Bathory is not the blackest of black, but they are pretty close.
Yeah.
They're great. Anyway, sorry, black metal. I'll stop. It happens.
We got off on a little metal tangent there.
We did.
It happens sometimes.
Yeah, what we were trying to do was like align the culture, and then I just like went off the rails and was like, let's talk about Venom for a minute.
Well, I mean, because what we were talking about was Bob Hoskins' Song and Dance. Mm. And
his similarly built gymnast.
Yeah, because somebody's doing like backflips and all these like cartwheels and stuff, and you know it's not Bob Hoskins doing that shit.
No.
They had to find somebody who was also a George Costanza type and a gymnast.
Yeah.
Where do you find such a person?
They put out a casting call.
Like, who's a gymnast that looks like Bob Hoskins? Like, at that point, aren't you, like, pretty damn limber?
I don't know.
I can't imagine, like, Bob Hoskins becoming a gymnast and looking the way that he does, like, even 6 months down the road.
No.
So, like, they really had to... I wonder if, like, they had a gymnast that was in, like, a suit.
Maybe.
Like a Bob Hoskins suit. I wouldn't put it past them.
They're just like...
The Conspielbergsy reigns.
Oh my god. I think that's a pretty common practice, making your stuntmen look as much like...
Yeah, I know, but actor. I mean, like, you know, people aren't as big as Arnold Schwarzenegger, but there are people that like kind of look like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Sure.
Like, you can get that guy and just put like a mullet wig on him, and he's good.
He's fine.
Like, you can find somebody who looks relatively like Sylvester Stallone in the face.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, use him as a stuntman.
Yeah.
And he's just as big as Sly Stallone. You can't find a Bob Hoskins looking dude out there.
That's
They've got to
hard.
Be hard to come by.
Yeah, I'm sure they put out a casting call.
I mean, Danny DeVito's not a stuntman. He's not coming out there and doing that shit. He's about the closest one I can think of.
Well, there are probably stuntmen that you don't know that look like...
If Robin Williams walked around on his knees, then maybe he could be a Bob Hoskins stuntman.
Conspiracy reigns.
Conspielbergsy.
Conspielbergsy.
It does. My God.
I just don't know. I mean, this movie had a definitive, like, arc.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So, as you say that, let's... segue into, was it a disaster or a delight? What do you think?
Man.
Would you eat that dessert? If Who Framed Roger Rabbit was a dessert that somebody had like scraped out of somebody's fridge and just combined all into one big bowl for you, would you eat that dessert? There's some shit in there that's maybe not great. But overall... it kind of came together pretty well.
It smells pretty good.
It's just got that strange aftertaste.
Eh, no, I wouldn't.
No,
you don't want it? I think it's a capable movie, but I don't, you know, like Jesus said. He's just like, hey, listen, don't be cold. Or Paul said this.
Yeah.
Don't be cold. Be cold or be hot, but don't be lukewarm because I'm going to spit you out of my mouth.
Yeah. Is this a spit you out of your mouth?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Spit ye out of my mouth. Quoting the Bible that I don't believe in.
I'm on the fence about this movie, too. In one way, like, I kind of think that...
You know, I just said I'd spit it out of my mouth.
I know, but...
So I'm not on the fence.
Well, no, I'm on the fence. I'm sorry, I'm not on the fence also. I'm on the fence about whether or not I agree with you.
Oh.
Is what I meant to say. I'm sorry.
Well, there's nothing new.
Well, I'm thinking about it. I'm kind of talking it out right now.
Mm.
Because I do think that this movie provokes more interesting discussion than I thought it did.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting on its own. Like, we're bored by a lot of movies.
And we're dicks, y'all.
I wasn't bored by this movie, and I felt like even though the thing it had to say wasn't, like, super important, it did have something to say. And it got that message across.
And it like gently nudged at things that it thought it might want to say eventually, but didn't.
I'm not gonna spit lukewarm water out of my mouth. I'll swallow that water because I'm thirsty. So, you know, that's what I'm gonna say. I'm gonna say, duh. That's what I give it.
The D sound. Duh.
Duh.
Yeah.
If somebody said, Hey, we're thinking about watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit tonight. What do you think?
I mean, it depends on if I like them or not.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Whether or not you're cruel or not, like you're gonna foist something onto somebody, or or deprive them of an experience. What are you saying?
Foist it on them because they're gonna be like, I think this movie's gonna be something other than it's not, and they watch it and they're like, oh,
yeah,
what a waste of an hour and 41 minutes, and then I can be like, I stole that hour and 41 minutes of your life. It's devious.
Oh, that's mean.
Yeah.
You are in this for the long haul, aren't you?
That's the sweetest revenge.
You just want me to call you Judge Doom. That's the only
thing. That is exactly what I want.
You want that to be a nickname of yours.
That's exactly what I want.
Rachel Doom Smith.
Rachel Judge Doom Smith.
Judge Rachel Doom Smith. I like that because it's like you're a smither of dooms.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, man. That's what I want to be for Halloween.
Emblazoned on the Doom Forge. Fuck yes. That sounds awesome to me.
Some crazy pitch harmonics, just like, wow!
Oh, man. Lyrics by Blind Guardian.
No.
Of course.
No, yes. Not Blind Guardian. Somebody else.
Well, we're going to have to fight about this off air because we're running out of time.
Oh, okay. I mean...
Gone!
Well,
it's over!
That's over! Well, that was racist.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was racist against because it was just a bizarre mishmash of stereotypical accents.
Who knows, but that's racist. That's our new show.
Oh, I think that Dave Chappelle already invented that game.
Yeah, he's the king. Don't try and reinvent the wheel, Jordan and Rachel. You're not doing anything.
I wasn't trying to. Rachel, nothing.
Yeah. But yeah, guys, thanks for listening. This was a blast.
It was.
Be sure to write us a review on Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars. Write something on there. We'll read it on the air. Give you full credit for it and everything. So don't write something you're ashamed of, because we'll read it out loud on the air.
And make sure that you give if you can make a username, make it really funny. Because that's my favorite thing. That's the height of comedy for everything that I do, is naming things something silly so that whenever they pop up, I can see them over and over again. Like my avatar on the Xbox
You are ridiculous. Account
is Grabby Snakey.
Oh my God. Somebody else sees that online and they're just like confused. Well, I think I know that person. I know who that person is and how they would act in real life. Yeah.
Grabby Something like Snakey. That.
Anyway, guys, yeah, thanks for listening. Shoot us a line on Recipe for Disaster podcast on Facebook.
Yeah.
Recipe for Disaster Show at gmail.com. We're going to miss you guys for a week.
We are?
Oh, no, it's just going to be a week until we record a new one.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Rachel doesn't miss you. That's the moral of the story.
I only miss a few things.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
Bye.